Today is International Radio Day, and in recognition of the occasion, we take you to Radio Yeseuca, a college radio station in San Salvador, El Salvador. There, I had the opportunity to meet with the station's director, who stands as one of the last beacons of free speech in a country experiencing a real-time backsliding of democracy. Before we go to the interview, it's important to understand El Salvador's historical context. The country endured a brutal 12-year civil war, during which over 75,000 civilians lost their lives, more than 1% of the total population. The war was marked by a fierce struggle against fascism, led by various leftist groups. If you want to learn more, you can find my previous reporting on Radio Venceremos, a celebrated underground resistance station, on our website after the special. Notably, the Catholic Church played a pivotal role in the resistance. Many members of the church in El Salvador embraced liberation theology, advocating for social change and justice. The church's influence made it a target, leading to the infamous assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero in 1980. Right-wing assassins shot and killed Romero while he was delivering mass, sparking widespread outcry. Other priests were also murdered for their activism, fueling the national movement of progressive radio stations, including Yeseuca, which remains affiliated with the Central American University, or Universidad Centroamérica, UCA. While El Salvador is no longer in the state of civil war, the country faces new challenges. Last month, I had the opportunity to sit down with the brave men and women who are risking their lives in the name of free speech and press freedom.
Soy Herminia Funes, periodista desde hace más de 25 años.
I am Herminia Funes, a journalist for more than 25 years. I have a degree in communication sciences, and I have 1 year of master's studies in political science. And I also have training in media self-regulation. I had the opportunity to specialize in radio production in Quito, Ecuador, and I am now part of the management of this radio station. However, I worked here more than 20 years ago when the radio station started, and then I had the chance to train in South America, and also had a very brief stint in public administration. I was part of the first generation of commissioners of the Institute for Access to Public Information in this country. The country had the opportunity to implement an access law that was considered the fourth best in the world out of 100 laws that existed at the time. The situation now is totally different, but we were part of that first generation of commissioners. Now, I am the director of the radio station, and I have been a university professor and thesis advisor.
Here in San Salvador, we're at the radio como Yeseuca.
Sí.
Can you talk a little bit about the history of this radio station and how it was formed?
Okay. La radio nace como el sueño de uno de los mártires de la UCA, ¿verdad? El padre Ignacio Yacuría.
The radio was born as the dream of one of the martyrs of the UCA, Father Ignacio Yacuría. Father Yacuría always said that people should have a microphone, a medium that would allow them to make their voices heard. The people who are generally discriminated against, the poor, those who do not have a space in commercial radio stations or the media. Because especially in the capital, what mattered was what the official, the minister, or the president said. But in the countryside, we did not know what the people felt. That was Father Ignacio Yacuría's dream. He wanted a media outlet. He wrote and helped Monseñor Romero, and Monseñor had a church radio station called YSAX. That's where I started my work as a professional, doing university internship practices. Father Yacuría believed that having a media outlet within the Society of Jesus was important. That is how this radio station was born. It was established 33 years ago, shortly after the murder of the Jesuit priests, about 1 or 2 years after their assassination. The radio station was also born in a context where the war had just ended. We were in that period of turmoil, and this medium emerged to provide a space for people to express these problems. People always have something to say about public policies. That's how the Yesuka was born. Many community radios were also created at the time, but this one, in particular, had the added value of being a radio station of the Society of Jesus, which gave it an extra layer of credibility due to the trust people have in the Jesuits. We have national coverage. This country is small, but due to the terrain, we have repeaters in different parts of the country to guarantee the signal. Now, the radio is also expanding into multimedia. That is the story of Yesuka, bringing the microphone to the community. Here, there is a community of radio listeners. The people feel the station belongs to them. If something doesn't sound right, if the wrong music is played, they call you to complain, and that's a good thing because they feel that this is their medium, their companion. It's important for us. UCA has been conducting national surveys for over 35 years, and we rank as the second most popular radio station nationwide, competing with commercial stations. We are the second more preferred source for news, alongside UCA's stations. The Yesuka is in second place, competing with a radio station called the YSKL, which is known as KL La Poderosa. It has been around for, I don't know, more than 60 or 70 years and has significant financial capital. Yesuka competes with it, not with that kind of capital, but with a lot of courage and a strong commitment to independent journalism. Every government has accused the radio of being against them because UCA's radio stations has always called out every administration when they did wrong. Even the FMLN, a progressive party for the poor, once issued a statement using UCA of being right-wing because it criticized the FMLN. But if something is done well, there will be criticism. During the Funes administration and later as well, we always spoke out about what was wrong. The radio was maintained its impartiality. We try, although Monsignor Romero used to say, we are not impartial, we are partial to the truth. We want to stand where the truth is. And it is difficult, extremely difficult. It has never been easy to do journalism in this country. But in the current context, it's even more challenging. There is a lot of danger, but the press team has incredible courage. People want to be where the news is happening. They sign their names to their work and they are not afraid, or rather, they are afraid, but they are even more outraged. Recently, there was an uprising in a prison. I don't know if you all heard about it. There has been no official information about what happened. We don't know. There are unofficial sources who have given us some details, which we will push soon because they are linking the case to something bigger. The people trust the radio. They give us information and they tell us, this is happening. How should we handle it? That is the story of this radio station. It was born as a dream of a martyr because a reality, and has stood by the communities, the poorest folks, and anyone who has something to say. These have been 33 years of independent journalism. We do not follow any agenda, not even from the Jesuits. They don't tell us what to do. And I believe that is true independence.
A lot, I feel like, of the international community is a little unaware of what's been going on in El Salvador as far as changes in government and the suppression of free speech. I know, like, El Faro moved to Costa Rica. From your perspective, can you summarize what you've seen in these last few years in your country and in the city and how it's affected USCA?
Yo le decía que nunca ha sido fácil en El Salvador hacer periodismo. Antes,
I was saying that journalism has never been easy in El Salvador. In the 1970s and the 1980s, there were death squads. After the peace agreements were signed, the country introduced a civilian national police force with a different mindset. But governments, well, I think this is true in every country, are not friends of the press because they do not want to be questioned. However, even ARENA governments held press conferences and their officials gave interviews. with the arrival of Bukele, and this is not an exaggeration, everything changed. For example, when I was at the Institute for Access to Public Information, we passed a resolution stating that all public officials, upon entering a living office, must declare their assets. There is an office here called Providad, where officials declare their assets, but the Institute mandated that this information should be made public. To give an example, when we were at the Institute for Access Public to Information, we rented offices spaces for about $6,000 per month. We later secured funding from USAID for office space. Now they pay more than $20,000 per month for their location. The question is, who owns the building? Who receives these payments? Before, you could request information from institutions and ministries. Each institution had an information officer responsible for handling requests. If you wanted to know why a water project in a community had not been completed after 2 years, they were required to respond. The country's access to information law wasn't exclusive to citizens. Anyone, even children, could request information from abroad. Now, what happens? You cannot go to an institution and submit a request because everything must have presidential approval. No one can speak independently. Previously, for example, if the Minister of Health was asked at a press conference whether COVID-19 vaccines had arrived, he would answer, "Today, no official can speak, no one. Everything is managed through the presidential office." Formally, there is democracy, but what do we call this? Regarding the prison riot I mentioned, were there deaths? And the prison authorities haven't held a press conference. The government has said nothing. Families are left wondering whether their relatives are dead. There is no access to public information. Access to information is a pillar of democracy. Without it, people speculate. Journalists report because we find this information. When they were building the maximum security prison, CICOT, they didn't announce it. A source typed us off, and we went through the wilderness to document it. We took photos and published them. The next day, Bukele had to announce that they were building the prison, but otherwise, we have access to nothing. The government has an extensive information control system, including thousands of trolls paid $700 to $900 a month to post in favor of the government and its ministers. Social media has been important for gaining access to some information. But if we assess this period, access to information has been completely shut down. The state of exception has curtailed rights. They can take anyone without explanation. You have no right to a lawyer, no right to know why you are being detained, no warrant, nothing. As a journalist, I recently had an incident at my home. I was terrified. I thought they were coming to take me. There is a lot of fear. Bukele governs through the state of exception because people cannot question him. If you speak out, they threaten to apply the state of exception to you. People say, well, it's good that they are arresting gang members, but they could do that without the state of exception. There are already laws and frameworks to arrest criminals. The state of exception wasn't necessary. And now we are entering its third year. The Constitution states that it's an exceptional measure, but it has been turned into a governing policy. Since 2018, the country has had zero access to public information and intense persecution of independent journalism. It feels like the government has aporophobia, a fear not just to fear, but dread of the poor. They do not care about the poor. The government spends millions on external PR to paint El Salvador as a paradise. They boast about the state-of-the-art animal hospital, Chivo Pets, while public hospitals lack essential equipment. Our radio station has a political satire program where fictional characters pretend to be animals to receive proper medical care, because in hospitals they lack the necessary equipment. This kind of content raises awareness about how dire the situation is. During this time, there has been intense persecution of the press. There is a constant fear that cases will be fabricated to arrest journalists At the radio station, we have activated some security protocols, and we are in the process of reaching out to the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights to request protective measures because the situation looks grim. For example, my daughter is in her 7th year of medical school now, doing hospital rotations. I tell her not to mention my name. Only when absolutely necessary should she disclose that I am her mother. Otherwise, she shouldn't tell anyone. That could create problems for her because she's studying at the country's only public university. This situation creates issues. My daughters cannot post pictures of me on their social media accounts. I never experienced this before, but now I do. Even traffic laws, if you take cough medicine and it shows up on a breathalyzer test, you get fined. It feels like the government is ruling through fear. The population is paralyzed. As a radio station, we continue working, but always with the thought that something could happen to us. I worry about my daughters. If I am at work and they are home alone, I need to know if something happens. What if the military tries to enter? They ask me, Mom, what do we do? I've already timed how long it will take me to get home in an emergency. I tell them, do not open the door. Through APES, El Salvadorian Journalist Association, we have agreements with international organizations to evacuate a journalist in under 24 hours if needed. Before, large media outlets weren't allowed to join APES due to political reasons, but now, in the current situation, the major media organizations are united. APES, APES, is now offering protection to any journalist, whether they are members or not. The problem is, I won't live without my daughters. I can't move unless they can come with me. We are constantly thinking about emergency escape routes. I ask myself, what will I do? Where will I hide while figuring out what to do next? At home, I have multiple layers of security, several locked gates and bars on the windows. I have thought about how long it will take for someone to break in, and if that will give me enough time to arrive home. This sounds like something from a movie, but it is a reality. My colleagues are deeply committed to this work, but we don't know how long UCA will allow us to keep exposing these issues. For example, there was a rape inside the National Library Bukele Symbolic Project. We exposed it and we faced serious backlash, even a lawsuit. Yes, the one in the historic center. That library was built on a UNESCO-protected historical site. The original structure survived the 1986 earthquake without damage, but Bukele demolished it. He doesn't care about heritage preservation. He ripped out the original European imported floors from the National Palace and replaced them with cheap ceramic tiles. The library was meant to be a symbol of his administration, but when we exposed the rape case, the government tried to cover it up. We had all the evidence. During the pandemic, a nursing home saw the deaths of nearly 90 elderly residents. The government tried to hide it. We got access to the registry of deaths and published it. This is why the government is angry at us. UCA is afraid, too. The new leadership is young, and they seem hesitant about allowing us to continue publishing such critical reports. But we will not stop. But the reality is harsh, but it must be told. Now, with mining, the country is completely militarized. They are fabricating charges against protesters to intimidate them. But these communities are organized and will not kneel before the military. If you Google Arminia Funes, you will find me immediately because of my work with the Institute for Access to Public Information and now at the radio station. Bukele has known who I am since he was mayor. I work on multiple cases against him. When people ask me what I do, I don't say I am a journalist. I say I'm a teacher. You must be very careful when driving. Police checkpoints are everywhere. They are desperate to generate revenue, so they are handing out fines for everything. The officers don't even understand the laws. They just know they have quotas to fill.
Con el miedo. Y la gente, estamos casi que paralizados. Como radio, seguimos trabajando, pero pensando en que algo puede pasarnos.
How have you and the radio station been able to, you know,
¿cómo usted y la estación de radio ha podido
mantener independencia, beacon of democracy,
como una luz de independencia y democracia,
and, you know, being able to gather information and news
y,
when there's
none. Encontrar información y noticias cuando no hay, cuando el gobierno no está cooperando con proveerlo?
Okay. El tema de credibilidad a la UCA y por lo tanto a JSUCA ha sido clave.
What are the security measures that we implement at the radio station? The credibility of UCA and therefore the JSUCA has been key because people trust us with information, even those who currently work in the government. We have sources inside the government who provide us with information, but they cannot do so over the phone because they are constantly subjected to polygraph tests. Their devices are inspected and they are even required to hand over their passwords, just like a jealous boyfriend asking the proof of love. Government employees must do the same. However, we have ways to communicate. We meet in person and use coded language, for example. We meet in person and use coded language. For example, if someone calls and says, "Hey friend, I'm moving to a new house. I'd like you to come to the housewarming." I know that means they have something urgent to tell me. We meet in a safe place and exchange information. We have important sources, people who are outraged, who tell us, "I can't take this anymore. This is happening right now." A new internal resolution was just issued in the Social Security Institute. However, we don't just take their word for it. As much as possible, they provide us with documents. But people are afraid to even take pictures because of the surveillance cameras and phone inspections. Still, people find ways to get the information out. Today, for example, we are following a serious case related to the prison system. When they killed Alejandro Mason, because that's what happened, someone tipped us off. The problem was, we didn't know how to tell his family. He had been providing information to the minister. He had become inconvenient for the government. When they killed him, they removed all his organs. We obtained photos. His body had no organs, no brain. Why did they remove them? His lawyer says it was to erase any evidence of what had been done to him. His cousin, Ernesto Mason, is also in prison. He was close to Bukele. There are so many details. People trust the radio station and provide us with information. It is risky because we have to arrange secure meetings. We are not security experts, but we try to implement basic protocols to ensure safe encounters. People who share information with us are very afraid. They could lose their jobs. They are under constant surveillance. And if they step out of line, they are fired. They are threatening to silence. Many are fleeing to the United States. The situation is dire. But the trust we have built as a media outlet remains strong. Large independent outlets like El Faro and Factum are respected, but they come from a different background. They have always been seen as part of an elite. JSUCA, on the other hand, had always been a radio station for the people. We have been involved in investigative journalism for 5 or 6 years now. People recognize this and provide us with a lot of information. Of course, we verify everything, but the credibility of UCA is what gives us the trust and closeness to the people.
¿Verdad? Pero creo que la credibilidad de la UCA es lo que nos permite esa confianza y cercanía de la gente.
you know, a lot of the media is talking about like how Bitcoin has been so good and stuff like that, but just what we're seeing with our own eyes, it's the people have been like left behind. Have you seen Bitcoin become a part of the problem as well?
Este presidente maneja narrativas que no son nuevas, ¿verdad? La han utilizado mucho dictadores.
This president uses narratives that are not new. Many dictators have used them. He presents himself as royalty. Everything he does, from the red carpets in his palace to his outfits, is designed to communicate power. People love celebrity culture and he sells himself like that. One of his main narratives is, "We are the safest country in the world." He repeats it constantly and people believe it. But the data tells a different story. El Salvador, a country of less than 21,000 square kilometers, is practically built over mass graves, many disappeared people, and buried in clandestine graves. I don't know if we are at the level of Mexico, where people disappear and are later found buried, but here, the government claims there are zero homicides, yet people are still disappearing. Drug trafficking is another issue. It existed under previous governments, including the FMLN, but under this administration, there was an agreement with the gangs, and now drug trafficking is part of the equation. With Bitcoin, Bukele marketed it as the best innovation and gave everyone a $30 credit in a government-issued digital wallet. I refused to open mine because I knew they would collect my personal data. But later, I found out that someone else had used my identity to claim my $30. Many journalists were victims of this data theft, and we filed a complaint with the Attorney General's office because we never accessed the Chivo wallet. Who controls the Chivo wallet? Bukele himself, personally. He plays with those funds through his phone. Where are the profits? No one knows. We claimed that the profits could fund Chivo Pets, the animal hospital, but in reality, people still have to pay for services there. The real users of Bitcoin in El Salvador are a tiny percentage, less than 1%. We conducted surveys, and most locals don't understand how it works. If you go to some beaches, there are places that accept Bitcoin, but the average person doesn't use it. Bukele sells the image of El Salvador as a paradise. He claims we have the best hospital in Latin America, Hospital El Salvador. But during the pandemic, people died there due to a lack of specialists and medications. The facility has high-tech equipment, but there is no trained staff to operate it. In reality, it's just a large warehouse. It doesn't have the infrastructure of a real hospital. Meanwhile, Bukele invests in flashy PR campaigns. In Manhattan, you can see massive billboards promoting Surf City. But what is Surf City? It's just a name. It doesn't mean anything. For Salvadorians living abroad, this marketing is dazzling. But if they turn and visit a local shopping mall, they see high-end stores like Nine West, luxury brands, and extravagant fast food restaurants. They think the country is prosperous, but those stores have been here for years. Bukele didn't bring them. Look at the viaduct project he's promoting. It's supposed to improve traffic on a major highway, Carretera a los Chorros, but prisoners in a trusty status are being used for construction. What happened 3 weeks ago? A section of the structure collapsed, killing 3 workers. Just recently, an earthquake caused another part to fall. When it's completed, I won't drive on that viaduct. I'd rather take a longer, more expensive route than risk my life. Bukele's administration is all about aesthetics, like putting makeup on a dying patient. Everything looks glamorous on the outside, but the reality is completely different. Foreigners who moved here believing in the Bitcoin dream are now realizing the truth. Many invested their life savings in a cooperative called Cosabi, which turned out to be a scam. Kosabi was essentially Bukele's personal cash reserve. When it collapsed, thousands of people lost their savings. Some of the executives were arrested, but one died in a helicopter crash, an accident that many believe was actually an assassination to silence him. Another cooperative, Coaspae, has also collapsed. Salvadorans who spent decades working in the U.S. and retired here have lost everything. Now they are facing reality. Some foreigners are also being targeted. A returning Salvadorian was recently jailed after failing a breathalyzer test. He had simply come home for the holidays. He later posted on social media, "If you are a foreigner, do not come to El Salvador." Slowly, people are waking up to the truth. This government excels at fabricating wonderful stories. We are the safest country in the world. We have the best healthcare, the best economy. But the reality is much darker. The university itself is analyzing the situation by looking at what happened in Nicaragua. Over there, the government shut down UCA Managua, seized all its assets, and gradually closed down its media outlet, starting with the radio station. UCA El Salvador sees this as a warning, like looking into a mirror. We believe that Bukele is watching what Ortega has done, but he's surpassing him. What Ortega did over time, Bukele is doing at an accelerated pace. At the moment, there is no immediate fear that the university will be closed, but we are preparing for that possibility. That is why, as a radio station, we made sure to secure equipment that allows us to continue broadcasting online if they shut us down physically. There is real persecution, and we fear that the radio could be shut down. Our investigative journalists are receiving constant threats on their phones, at their homes. There is an increased presence of police and soldiers around them. This year is crucial for us. The university authorities are assessing the situation. We don't know if we will still be operating next year. With Bukele, he can make a decision overnight, and he has an entire army supporting him. Some sectors of the country are getting fed up with his childish behavior and the absolute power of his family. The reality is that he is an unconstitutional president. The country's constitution doesn't allow re-election. It's very clear about that. Yet, he's running for another term. This is unconstitutional. We refuse to refer to him as President Bukele. We simply call him Nayib Bukele because he's not a legitimate president. He dismantled the constitutional court and replaced the justices with his own people. The legislature no longer drafts laws. He does. He sends the laws to Congress and the legislators approve them without even reading them. The most recent example is the new mining law. El Salvador is an extremely small and densely populated country, barely 20,000 square feet with over 6 million inhabitants. But now, they plan to exploit mineral resources. In larger countries like Argentina and Brazil, mining operations are in desert regions. Here, if one river gets contaminated, it affects the entire country. To push this mining agenda, Bukele has already militarized certain areas. The government imprisoned 5 environmentalists for over 2 years, sending a clear message. If you oppose this, this will happen to you. The medical system has collapsed. We don't have specialists. I personally don't have the courage to go to Social Security because if they see my name, Armenia Funes, I fear they will admit me and kill me. I pray that I don't get seriously ill because I wouldn't have the choice but to go to a private hospital. I don't trust the public healthcare system anymore. The former director of the Institute of Human Rights at UCA got sick during the pandemic, went to Social Security, and died. He was only 35 years old. His death raises a lot of questions. Now, with the new mining law, the military is already in these regions. Who's going to protest under these conditions? People are organizing, and they will be the ones to face the military. There will be deaths because people are determined to resist. The medical sector has been completely dismantled, and Bukele doesn't care. At Benjamin's Bloom Children's Hospital, there are no psychiatrists. All three resigned. If a child needs psychiatric treatment, they send them to the adult hospital. In many specialties, there is only one doctor for a massive population. Education is in a crisis as well. The government used to provide school notebooks, but we have information still being verified that they won't be providing them at the beginning of the school year. Some teachers will no longer be hired on an annual basis, but on a three-month contract. Some private schools won't be buying their own textbooks anymore because the government is supposed to provide them. But these new government textbooks contain propaganda about Bitcoin and Bukele. It's clear that they want to indoctrinate people. We are looking at a series of serious failures across multiple sectors. I fear that within a year, the radio station might be shut down and UCA could be closed. The university continues to be very critical. Its editorials are harsh. When you read them, they do not sugarcoat anything. They call Bukele an irresponsible dictator, a fool, and they don't hold back. How much longer will Bukele tolerate this? The journalists from El Faro have already left the country. What are we going to do? Many of us have our bags packed, just in case we have to leave. My daughter tells me, "Mom, I don't want to leave. I am 2 years away from becoming a doctor." My younger daughter, who's 16, says, "Mom, I want to graduate here. Don't take me away. I feel tied down. Otherwise, I would have left already." But this is a commitment. We have to keep fighting, whether it's through the microphone, through stories, or through gathering the data that no longer exists in this country. Most of the information that reaches the public is because we manage to report it, or someone trusts us enough to share it. But without access to information, what kind of decisions can the people make? The population is in the dark, while the government bombards them with propaganda. For example, in a national radio broadcast, Bukele declared, "Tomorrow, tomatoes will be sold at 50 for $1 and potatoes at 120 per bag." Does he even know how much farmers pay for potatoes? The next day, when people went to buy at the markets, they demanded the prices that Bukele had announced. The new agro markets sell produce at artificially low prices. These markets are government run. But how are they keeping prices so low? Who's subsidizing them? I went to an agro market last Sunday. They were selling 16 limes for $1. So I went to buy some. But then I saw that they were taking photos of people in line. When I noticed, I stepped away. This government operates through manipulation and propaganda. And we are living in a reality that is completely disconnected from the fantasy they sell to the world.
De que acá tenemos mucho de ficción, ¿verdad? La realidad está muy lejos de lo que están pintando.
What do you think the future holds? You know, what can we expect over these next few years, especially with these insane developments y los ríos de minerales, and you know, Bukele becoming a dictator. You know, what do you think these next years look like for El Salvador and for su radio?
La universidad misma analiza la situación como lo que pasó en Nicaragua. cerró allá la UCA, la obligaron a cerrar, le incautaron todo su bien.
The university itself is analyzing the situation by looking at what happened in Nicaragua. Over there, the government shut down UCA Managua, seized all its assets, and gradually closed down its media outlet, starting with the radio station. UCA El Salvador sees this as a warning, like looking into a mirror. We believe that Bukele is watching what Ortega has done, but he's surpassing him. What Ortega did over time, Bukele is doing at an accelerated pace. At the moment, there is no immediate fear that the university will be closed, but we are preparing for that possibility. That is why, as a radio station, we made sure to secure equipment that allows us to continue broadcasting online if they shut us down physically. There is real persecution, and we fear that the radio could be shut down. Our investigative journalists are receiving constant threats on their phones, at their homes. There is an increased presence of police and soldiers around them. This year is crucial for us. The university authorities are assessing the situation. We don't know if we will still be operating next year. With Bukele, he can make a decision overnight and he has an entire army supporting him. Some sectors of the country are getting fed up with his childish behavior and the absolute power of his family. The reality is that he is an unconstitutional president. The country's constitution doesn't allow re-election. It's very clear about that. Yet, he's running for another term. This is unconstitutional. We refuse to refer to him as President Bukele. We simply call him Nayib Bukele because he's not a legitimate president. He dismantled the constitutional court and replaced the justices with his own people. The legislature no longer drafts laws. He does. He sends the laws to Congress and the legislators approve them without even reading them. The most recent example is the new mining law. El Salvador is an extremely small and densely populated country, barely 20,000 square feet with over 6 million inhabitants. But now, they plan to exploit mineral resources. In larger countries like Argentina and Brazil, mining operations are in desert regions. Here, if one river gets contaminated, it affects the entire country. To push this mining agenda, Bukele has already militarized certain areas. The government imprisoned 5 environmentalists for over 2 years, sending a clear message. If you oppose this, this will happen to you. The medical system has collapsed. We don't have specialists. I personally don't have the courage to go to Social Security because if they see my name, Armenia Funes, I fear they will admit me and kill me. I pray that I don't get seriously ill because I wouldn't have a choice but to go to a private hospital. I don't trust the public healthcare system anymore. The former director of the Institute of Human Rights at UCA got sick during the pandemic, went to Social Security, and died. He was only 35 years old. His death raises a lot of questions. Now, with the new mining law, the military is already in these regions. Who's going to protest under these conditions? People are organizing, and they will be the ones to face the military. There will be deaths because people are determined to resist. The medical sector has been completely dismantled, and Bukele doesn't care. At Benjamin's Bloom Children's Hospital, there are no psychiatrists. All 3 resigned. If a child needs psychiatric treatment, they send them to the adult hospital. In many specialties, there is only one doctor for a massive population. Education is in a crisis as well. The government used to provide school notebooks, but we have information still being verified that they won't be providing them at the beginning of the school year. Some teachers will no longer be hired on an annual basis, put on a three-month contract. Some private schools won't be buying their own textbooks anymore because the government is supposed to provide them. But these new government textbooks contain propaganda about Bitcoin and Bukele. It's clear that they want to indoctrinate people. We are looking at a series of serious failures across multiple sectors. I fear that within a year, the radio station might be shut down and UCA could be closed. The university continues to be very critical. Its editorials are harsh. When you read them, they do not sugarcoat anything. They call Bukele a irresponsible dictator, a fool, and they don't hold back. How much longer will Bukele tolerate this? The journalists from El Faro have already left the country. What are we going to do? Many of us have our bags packed just in case we have to leave. My daughter tells me, Mom, I don't want to leave. I am 2 years away from becoming a doctor. My younger daughter, who's 16, says, Mom, I want to graduate here. Don't take me away. I feel tied down. Otherwise, I would have left already. But this is a commitment. We have to keep fighting, whether it's through the microphone, through stories, or through gathering the data that no longer exists in this country. Most of the information that reaches the public is because we manage to report it or someone trusts us enough to share it. But without access to information, what kind of decisions can the people make? The population is in the dark while the government bombards them with propaganda. For example, in a national radio broadcast, Bukele declared, "Tomorrow, tomatoes will be sold at 50 for $1. And potatoes at 120 per bag." Does he even know how much farmers pay for potatoes? The next day, when people went to buy at the markets, they demanded the prices that Bukele had announced. The new agro markets sell produce at artificially low prices. These markets are government run. But how are they keeping prices so low? Who's subsidizing them? I went to an agro market last Sunday. They were selling 16 limes for $1. So I went to buy some. But then I saw that they were taking photos of people in line. When I noticed, I stepped away. This government operates through manipulation and propaganda. And we are living in a reality that is completely disconnected from the fantasy they sell to the world.
La mañana y me toman foto. Yo estaba el domingo en el agromercado cuando vi que iban a tomar foto, me aparté.
If things get worse and they try to close this radio and conditions for everyone continue to be scary and oppressive, do you think we could see another movement like Radio Vencernos in the future if oppression continues?
Radio Venceremos y Radio Farabundo Martí transmitieron físicamente desde lugares específicos en la montaña.
During the Civil War, Venceremos and Radio Farabundo Martí broadcasted from specific locations in the mountains. Physically, a radio station couldn't do that because UCA wouldn't be willing to go underground. However, with the internet, we could continue broadcasting from an undisclosed location. If UCA is shut down, I would no longer feel safe in the country and would have to live with my family. Maybe we could continue the radio from abroad, from Guatemala, Costa Rica, or Mexico. But we would lose something essential, the voices of the people. Right now, we travel to report. When the prison riot happened, we went to Sonsonate to ask the people what was happening. How is the hospital handling the injured? What are the communities experiencing? Without being on the ground, who could inform us? We could try to establish a network of community correspondents, as we have done before, but people are afraid. Some listeners have told us they have to lower the volume on the radios because their neighbors have threatened them for listening to Yesuka. We are preparing, strengthening our technology, and looking for support from Jesuit universities in other countries. Maybe we could continue broadcasting from there, but it wouldn't be the same. We would be leaving behind the communities. It would be very difficult. The Nicaragua journalists in exile have managed to continue their work with contacts inside the country. But in Nicaragua, surveillance is extreme. If a journalist in Nicaragua sends an email to a source, the government has tracking technology that allows them to locate the journalist's house. Here, in El Salvador, the government has also acquired the latest surveillance technology. We have no doubt that they have monitoring us. I don't use an iPhone, which was something we had been discussing with an organization. They wanted to provide us with iPhones for better security. But even with my current phone, I've received malware attacks and terrifying threats. I have opened my phone to find obscene images with messages like, "This is what will happen to journalists." They threaten us with rape, murder, and bomb attacks on our transmission towers. At first, you don't believe these threats will materialize, but when the threats become more direct, you start to wonder if it's only a matter of time. There are people abroad who have told us, "Come here, we will support you." Some journalists have already gone into exile. If you don't have children, it's easier. But I have two daughters. My husband has been unemployed for 2 years because of me. Every time he applies for a job, his name is flagged because of his connection to me. The response is always the same. "You cannot work here." So what do? Do we get divorced so that he can get a job? Even business owners are afraid. A Hungarian Salvadorian businesswoman who was once a migrant herself told me, "I'm trying to recover my business and I cannot afford to be associated with you. I am deleting your contact from my phone." That's how people see UCA now, as a threat. Telling the truth creates problems. Are we supposed to only publish feel-good stories? If the government does something good, we want to report it. But when we don't have access to information, what are we supposed to say? The situation is critical. The team is scared. But we are also deeply committed. Journalism is a difficult profession. It exposes us to dangerous situations. We try to take precautions, but we are not willing to stop informing the public. The country longs for peace. Salvadorians are people of dialogue. If we cannot talk, we can't agree. We don't want to return to war, where thousands of people died, disappeared, and entire communities were destroyed. But we also don't want to live under a dictatorship like Nicaragua or Venezuela. People need access to real information when reality is painted with bright colors, makeup, and LED lights. It may look dazzling, but beneath the surface, the reality is different. People are losing their jobs. Businesses are shutting down. Government workers are being fired. Schools don't have teachers. Hospitals don't have doctors. Salvadorians are hardworking people. But we will not accept a dictatorship like Bukele's, which is harming the country immensely. Now, with the mining law, we know that El Salvador will not benefit from the gold extracted. The mining companies will take everything, and the country will be left in worse condition than before. Bitcoin didn't work. People don't understand it. The government's construction projects are being built by prisoners who are not trained builders. What kind of infrastructure is that? We have no transparency about where the millions of dollars in loans are going. And yet, the government keeps borrowing more. The International Monetary Fund needs to take this seriously. They can't keep giving money to a government that refuses to be accountable to its people. At the end of the day, we want to live in peace. But we will not allow ourselves to be deceived. We will not lower our heads in the face of censorship and fabricated government propaganda. Bukele is selling a fiction, and the world needs to understand that. In El Salvador, we are experiencing a serious political, social, and economic crisis. There is no separation of powers. People outside the country need to realize that democracies require checks and balances. But here, Bukele rules over everything, backed by the military. The Salvadorian people don't want to live this way. 33 years after the signing of the peace accords, we must remember their historical value. The war ended so that we would never have to live in dictatorship again. We refuse to live under Bukele's dictatorship.
Es importante que pensemos el valor histórico de haberle puesto punto final a un conflicto armado. No queremos vivir en dictadura.
Mucho valor.
Yes.
Sí. Puchica.
Sí, sí.
Qué difícil suena.
Sí, sí, sí.
Espero que estás.
Sí, no, muchas gracias.
Con seguridad.
Sí, sí, muchas gracias.
Any other final message?
No, muchas gracias a ustedes.
Thank you very much. I invite you all to visit our website and social media, not necessarily to like our content, but to stay informed and follow what's happening.
Radio Yese Uka was born from resistance, from the struggle for truth in a country torn apart by war. More than three decades later, it continues to serve as a voice for the most marginalized, even as press freedom in El Salvador is being threatened once again. The government of Nayib Bukele has steadily dismantled democratic institutions, silenced critics, restricted access to public information, and ruled under a state of exception, or martial law, that has stripped Salvadorans of basic civil liberties. Journalists like Hermenia Funes continue their work in the face of fear, surveillance, and threats, understanding that a free press is essential for a functioning democracy. As Bukele consolidates power and international organizations remain divided on how to respond, the role of independent media is more critical than ever. On this International Radio Day, we recognize the courageous reporters and media workers who continue to inform the public, often at great personal risk. Their work ensures that history is not erased, that the truth is not buried, and that the people of El Salvador have a platform to speak out. We also extend our gratitude to Brenda Perez of Centro del Pueblo for assisting with translations and helping to bring this important story to a broader audience. To hear this story again, find translations, or links to Radio Yese Uka, you can visit our website, kema.org, where this information will be uploaded after our local newscast.